right. Roy Mountlake Jr. here, and we are going to have a great show this afternoon and talking money. If you're just tuning in, this is going to be a fun show. It's called The Basics of Investing. We'll call it Investing 101 and the Basics of Financial Planning, which allows you to get on track and do what you need to do so you can win the money game, which is what we talk about all the time, is winning the money game. It's always about two things: get your income up, your expenses stay the same or down, and you build that gap, the quality of life gap, which is, you know, when you have a big gap between your income and your expenses, life is good. That's what we do. And so today we're going to go through some of those pieces that I believe to be, you know, basics, you know, the financial literacy of most people around the country right now is very low. That's why more than half of the people are living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, if you have a $500 emergency, it's like a major emergency. You know, I read an article that every financial mistake that middle America makes usually cost them around $12,000 or $13,000, and they tend to make them over and over and over again. When you start making $12,000 or $13,000 mistakes, then, you know, and you do them over and over and over again, it's hard when you're out there trying to get ahead to do things. So we're going to go through and do some basics. I want to give you some starting. I had lunch and talked to one of my buddies who's also in the financial business, and I said, you know, what would be a good show topic? He said, we'll do basics of financial planning. And then I thought, well, that makes sense. What if we do some investing 101? And so today I'm going to do that. And, you know, there's really, when you start looking at the basics, you can write this down, but your basics are this. You got to have a financial independence number. And that's the number that will allow you to quit working. You'll be, if you go to my website, roymountlakejr.com, I have a two-part series that will be posted probably tomorrow, which will allow you to look at how to develop what I call do-nothing money. That's the money that you do nothing for. It just comes in. It gets direct deposited into your checking account. And the first step is, how much do-nothing money do you need? And do-nothing would be, hey, if I don't ever work another day in my life, how much money do I need? That's your financial independence number. Well, I need 80 grand a year. So 80 grand a year, we start out, that's our financial independence number. And now if we push it out maybe 20 years out, well, you got inflation, so we probably got about 160 grand a year. And so you can run inflation. It's averaging about 3 to 4% on average over a long period of time. So that means your money's going to need to double about every 20 years. So 80 grand, and I need to be able to make sure that that comes back to me with inflation, meaning it's going to have to grow when I start pulling it. How do I do that? Well, first step's 20 times your income. How about that? Let's take 20 times our income. And if we needed 80 grand, we need $1.6 million. And then you sit there and you say, well, let's back this out and come up with a number, compound interest calculator. You can go online and do that. There's a million of them free. And you can say, how much do I need to save? Say it 8%, 6%, 10%, whatever number you want to put in, or you put in all three numbers, and you come up with a number. You say, well, I want to have $1.6 million. I'm going to inflate it at 3%. I do that for 20 years. I need $3.2 million. I'm starting with zero. My goal is 20 years from now to have $3.2 million. How much do I need to save every month? And you're like, all right, I need to do that. Well, maybe that's a little too soon. What happens at 30 years? We do that. And then all we do is make sure that the money is invested. We put it into the right things, diversify ourselves, have it automatically deducted out of our paycheck or checking account. Good chance that if you work for a company, about 70% of the population is eligible for some type of retirement plan where they'll do some matching in many cases. Hey, you don't even have to save quite as much, and that might be because you'll get some matching. So then we have our financial independence number. Basic number one rule of financial planning is come up with your FIN number, your FIN number, financial independence number. How much do I need to quit? How much do I need do nothing in order to be able to be okay? I remember back when I first got started, I was thinking, you know, it's been over 30 years ago, 35 years to be exact. 35 years ago, I thought, man, if I can make $40,000 a year, it would pay my house. I could live. I could survive. If I can just get to $40,000 a year. And I started looking at that. I said, it was my first financial independence number. Then once you get moving, you start accumulating money, you know, you do the things that cause you to do better, like you know more, do more, become an expert in your field, you know, work, find something you love to do. So you'll get up and go to work every day, but it's not really work because you like it. And then you decide you're going to be a pro, and, you know, professionals make lots of money. It's like, yeah, I watch golf tournaments and these guys are incredible. You know, they have two things going there. They love what they do because they get out there and they do it. I mean, it's if you've ever walked 18 holes of golf, sometime you need to try it in the 100 degrees. It's like I did it not too long ago. I was up in Philadelphia, and it was 113 degree heat index. The time I got through that, it was 7.4 miles walking. Well, run do that for 5 days in a row. And they do that, you know, 18 or 20 weeks a year just on tour. Those guys are pros. And what they do is they become the best in their field. But guess what happens when you become great? You get paid well. You don't have to be a professional golfer, but you can be a professional in what you do. So you go do that. You get your financial independence number. You start working. You're cruising. You're saying, okay, I've got that done. Here's what I did. I figured out that I need to save $1,200 a month on a consistent basis, and in 30 years or 20 years, I can get there. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to knock out my FIN number. That's $1,200 a month in 30 years. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go double my income because I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing. I read everything. I know everything. I study everything. I meet with people that are smarter than me, and I eventually get to be, you know, really good. And so, therefore, I deserve to make a lot more money because you've paid the price. You know, it amazes me that people work their whole life for 40 years, okay, hating their job, when in fact they can go work doing something they like, usually for about 10 years, and get themselves set up if they just get on with it and make a decision. So we do that. That's our financial independence number. We come up with it. So it's $1,200 a month. All right, now I have $1,200 a month going in. I've knocked out financial independence 30 years from now. All right, so I'm 25, I'm 55, I know I'm done. I've already done that. That's done. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to work on raising my income, and I'm going to knock out that number to 20 years. And then I might knock it out to 10 years, whatever it may be. If you own a business, you go build business income. You do all these things called do-nothing money income to where you get recurring income. And then one day you're like, okay, this is pretty cool. I'm ahead of the game. I busted my rear for 10 years, and what happened? Got myself set. Now I get to go enjoy life. You do the things I want to do that I'm able to do because I have time and money, which is the goal. So the first basic of financial planning is get your FIN number done. Number two is to have a plan, live or die, that will take care of all of the people that are important to you. Now, you know, clearly if you are married, you have kids, you have all that kind of stuff, all right, you've got responsibilities. I always ask people this: in the event something happened to you, how much of your income would you want your family to get? They say all of it. So we go in there and we build a plan around, if we die, we're going to have proper insurance to protect us, by term insurance, you know, however many times you need. Typically a good rule of thumb, which is not really completely right, but because it all has to do with what you do with it, but about 10 times your income is a start if you die. So now you've got that. And then you work on the living plan, which is, I'm going to go replace my income with savings and investments, and, you know, it could be a lot of different things, and I'm going to do that. So now what I've got is I got a plan, live or die. My FIN number is my live number, and my die number is my term life insurance that I bought. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to work on getting more stable all the time, speed the plan up, raise my income, do that kind of stuff. Might look at disability insurance as well, because in that way, if something happened to you, you'd be in a position where you get that. And so anyhow, and number three, so basic number one is financial independence number. Number two is live or die plan that'll get me there. Number three is going to be my defense and my offense. My defense is made up of a budget, an emergency fund. I'm going to totally eliminate consumer debt, cars, credit cards, all that kind of stuff, things that cause you to not be able to save money because you're paying it on things that are going down in value. And so as a result, you're hurting yourself. We're going to fix it. We're going to get rid of the debt. It's simple to get out of debt. Stop borrowing money, number one. Number two, get on a plan to line them up, smallest to largest. Pay, go get an extra job. Go make some more money. Apply that toward debt. Start getting out of that. The key element is you're not borrowing more. So we have a budget. We have a debt elimination plan. Then we make sure we don't go back in debt because of a setback. That's called an emergency fund. We do that. And then we make sure that we have all the proper insurance in place. We don't want to, you know, one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy is health. Related medical bills, get your health insurance in place. Ways to save money on that is to raise your deductibles and stuff like that. Get your car and homeowners in place, raise your deductibles and your emergency fund. That helps. All these little things, these are basics of financial planning. Then we go to the offenses, which is college funds for your kids, retirement funds. Before that, pay your house off. You're A-okay. Your balance sheet right. My name is Roy Matlock. We will be right back. We're going to look at our scoreboard as we come back. All right, back to Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we are talking about the basics of financial planning, as well as we're getting ready to go to Investing 101 to help you get a crash course on how to get started. And if you're, you know, if you've been investing money, you know, the funny thing I see all the time is that if I ask questions, simple questions like your life savings is in your 401k, where is it invested? They're like, I don't know. Well, I mean, I think that's important since it's your life savings, which is going to require you to make sure that you have that in place so you can eat as you get older and live, that kind of thing. So, guys, if you need help on any of this stuff, I would encourage you. I have put together on the website roymatlockjr.com. I think there's going to be, by the end of this weekend, there'll be over 30 shows that are on podcast, and our podcast is really growing every single week. And so go to roymatlockjr.com. We got several things going on, one of which is we're now beginning to do some workshops. So if you're young, want to get started, you can attend one of our young people workshops, which would be how to get your savings started and all the things you need to do if you've got kids, all that kind of stuff. And then if you're at or near retirement, we've got some workshops on that, which will allow you to really get into more detail on all the options that, you know, I can't cover in detail when it comes over the radio, but we can definitely do it in these seminars. So go to roymatlockjr.com. Just call the information number 866-651-4848, and you can get that kind of stuff going on. So we started with the basics. Let's finish the basics. Three basics: financial independence number, figure out the number, 20 times the number, and we're going to figure out our game plan. You know, I hear people all the time, well, I don't have any money to save. Well, get busy. Go to work, okay? Pick up an extra job. It's amazing to me, all the Uber drivers that I ask them, I say, is this your full-time gig? And they're like, no, this is just extra money. So it allows me to send my kids to college, allows me to do this kind of stuff. And so anyway, number two, the financial independence number is number one. Number two is live or die. I'm going to make sure that I am financially independent, or whoever I leave behind is financially independent. There you go. That's number two. Number three is you have a defense. That is your emergency fund, debt elimination, everything outside your mortgage, consumer credit, all that kind of stuff. So you got a budget, an emergency fund, debt elimination, have all the right insurance in place. And if someone asks you about your insurance, you need to be able to explain to them what you own. Don't let them just pull all this money out of your account, and then the next thing you know, you couldn't explain it. If you can't explain it, good possibility you're just pure. It's pure luck if you have the right thing. You may get lucky and somebody actually sold you the right thing, but in many cases, they sell you things like cash value life insurance, whole life, or universal life, and you're underinsured and overpremiumed, and you've got the low deductibles on your cars, and then before you know it, you're paying way too much. And, you know, you think about this. I mean, all you got to do is ask yourself, if you got a $500 scratch on your car, would you turn it into insurance? And they're like, no, wouldn't do that. Why? Because my rates will go up. Okay. Then why you got a $500 deductible or $200 deductible? You're not going to turn it in anyway. You're just paying premiums for something you're not going to use. Think through that. Isn't that just common sense stuff? So we go through. Then we go to the offense. We're going to, you know, get our fully funded retirement plans, 401ks, IRAs, might do a Roth, might do a traditional, depends on your situation. Then we're going to take and get our college funds set aside so our kids aren't hammered with student loan debt, praying that Elizabeth Warren will get elected and give it all up. Not going to happen. But anyway, the point being is that's the second thing. And then lastly, you're going to get your home paid off. I don't consider that to be like the top priority in your financial plan, but if you get a 15-year mortgage, you can do that. Then we go to our balance sheet. Our balance sheet is now our scoreboard. What's the scoreboard? It's assets minus liabilities equals net worth. Net worth you shouldn't include. I wouldn't include your personal residence because that's something that, you know, you get a little money back for living there, paying there. But the reality is very seldom, short of you doing a reverse mortgage, does it provide you an income. One of the rules of learning about money is you want to create things that pay you. You don't pay them. So that's the difference in a liability and an asset. So now you got your scoreboard. You say, I got $600,000 in assets, true assets outside of my home. I've got $100,000 in debt. I have a $500,000 liquid net worth at 5%. That's $25,000 of do-nothing money. There's my do-nothing money. $500,000, $25,000, million. I got $50,000 do-nothing money. And that's what our goal is to create do-nothing money. Now, where are we going to invest it? So we're going to go into Investing 101. Where do we go? Of course, we've already come to the conclusion that smartest thing we can do is find something we love to do and we get great at it. So we make a lot of money and we raise our income. I always tell people we have a goal to be a 2%er. That's about $300,000 in income. That means you look out there and say, I make more money than 98% of the population. How am I going to do that? I'm going to find something I really like to do. I'm going to become the best at it. And then, you know, it's going to happen one day. I'm going to make a lot of money. Heck, you think about it. You know, people, DJs as an example. They go out. There's DJs that make millions of dollars. There's personal trainers that start out doing personal training. Now they make millions of dollars. I mean, there's everything that you can think of. Somebody figured out a way. I was reading this thing about Orange Theory, you know, the workout place. Lady was 40 years old and single mom, and she was a workout fanatic. And she said, nobody knows how to create, you know, a workout that makes sense. So she opened a gym, and now she's multi. They're all over the world. So the point being is, don't think for 1 minute that you can't go out and be successful, but you just have to have a plan in place, a GPS, goal, plan, schedule. Start thinking about that. So let's go to basics of investing 101. Stocks, bonds, cash. So that's the first thing. Then we got real estate. I would say that would pretty well describe the majority of the different places. You know, I'm not going to tell you that Bitcoin is completely wrong, but I don't understand it. And that's one of the rules that I tell people, that if you can't understand it, and I'm not the only one that doesn't understand it. I mean, you know, Warren Buffett said he's not real clear on it. There's a lot of people that don't understand it, which is one of the rules that you never put money in things you can't tell somebody body about what it is, and they actually understand what you told them. So we start out stocks, bonds, cash, real estate. Those are things you put your money in. What is a stock? A stock is a piece of ownership of a corporation. I always tell people when you buy into stocks, you're buying into businesses. And the only difference is that business that you're buying into is a big business. So let's take, for instance, how you understand stocks. So let's say you owned a company, and that company, your business makes you $100,000 a year profit. And someone came to you and said, and it's a pretty, we'll call it ongoing, recurring revenue, customers come walking in the door. Maybe you've got a coffee shop, and if you show up or don't show up every morning, 7 a.m., 6 a.m., there's people rolling in there all day long, you own this coffee shop. And you're making money. You're making $100,000 profit on it. And someone came to you and said, hey, I'd like to buy your coffee shop. And you say, sure, how much you give me? And I say, well, I'll give you $100,000. You're like, no way, I would never do that. Making $100,000 a year, do nothing money. So then we start going into what's called multiples of what people would pay. That's how the stocks are traded based on what they do. So what we're going to do, we're going to get into all of this in the basics 101 of investing the rest of the show. Stay with me. We'll be right back. Money, guess what? That's what I do a lot, like 3-4 hours every weekend that I work with people, helping them with their money. And would you like to hang out with me for a while? Let me train you on how to become a personal financial analyst. If you're interested in something like that, I would encourage you to call us. Go to the roymatlackjr.com, call the number, just let us know, and you can do that. Or you can dial 866-651-4848, and that's our information line. It's got all kinds of things on there. So anyway, with that being said, as we came out of the break, I was kind of going through what a stock is. So you own a small business, and you're making $100,000 a year. It's pretty recurring, and somebody came to you and said, hey, I'll pay you $100,000 to buy your business. You would absolutely say, no way I'd do that, because I've built an entity that, you know, is making $100,000 a year and it's growing. And I come back to you and say, well, I'll give you $200,000. I'm like, no way, I would never do that. Okay. I mean, why would I sell that for $200,000 when I'm just going to sit back and make a couple $100,000 in the next few years, even if it doesn't grow, and we're growing? I said, well, I'll give you $1 million for it. And you say, hold on, you're giving me $1 million right now for that business? And then you start thinking about it. You say, that's not bad. That's called an earnings multiple. That's 10 times earnings. So what happens is you take the million, you get 10 times current earnings. You say, well, I'm out of here. Just sold my equity in my business. Now I can take that money and invest it. Challenge with that is if you're making $100,000 and you sold it for $1 million, you're probably only going to be able to invest it and realistically maybe get $50,000 or $60,000. So you might say, well, maybe I'll hold on to it, whatever. That's how all stocks are being traded. Well, it started like that. Then it got bigger. Then it got bigger. And then one day your name of your company is the little restaurant that was selling coffee is called Starbucks. And Starbucks, they now have stores all over. But still, you can buy those earnings. And so what you do is you go and you buy it. And you think, man, you know, that company is going to be great. I'm going to do that. I'm going to put some money in it. And because I think they're going to do better than what the earnings ratios are right now, I think they're going to do much better. And you buy it. Well, that's an individual stock. If you want an individual bond, you go out and you can buy different types of bonds. And by the way, before we leave stocks, you can get small companies, mid-size, you can get large companies, you can go international. You got all these different types of stocks that are a different company, but they're just pieces of ownership. Now, you can go to a bond. Now, what is a bond? A bond is a debt. So what happens is the easiest bond to understand is a U.S. savings bond. We loan money to the government. They pay us an interest rate. They don't pay us a lot, but we feel like chances are they're going to pay us back. It's the U.S. government, right? So we're going to do that. Or we may decide to loan it to a company, and they're going to pay us more than the U.S. government if it's a big company and they're called a corporate bond and maybe a AAA bond, something like that. And they're going to pay more than say you borrow it from the government, but, you know, not a little bit less than if you buy from a junk bond, which is a company that's not quite as solid. Similar, if you went to the bank and you have bad credit, you're going to pay a bigger, higher interest rate in order to borrow money. Then we have cash. Cash is money markets, things like that. We put it in the bank in a CD, things of that nature. So stocks, bonds, and cash. And then the other place that most people invest their money is in real estate. And when we talk about real estate is something that provides a lot of benefits. The reason people go into real estate is you buy a rental house. I'm going to give you a few of the things that go on right there. You know, I hear people all the time, I think I'm going to buy me a rental property. Well, let me give you a few things about buying your rental property. To start with, here's the reasons you would do it. The first reason is that you can utilize leverage. And what I mean by that is that you can put some money down, and then you can borrow the rest. And when you borrow the rest, you can have people pay rent. And when they pay the rent, they're paying off the loan that you have. And one day they'll pay your loan off, and you'll own a property that's paid for. That's pretty cool. Second thing is that property will go up in value even over time you expect it to. So if you buy the house for a couple hundred and it's worth $300, you get tax-deferred gains, meaning until you sell that house, you don't have to pay any taxes on it. And there's actually ways you can do what's 1031 exchanged, where you can actually exchange it and continue to defer those taxes. But even though the house is going up in value, you can depreciate that house. You can take it off your income taxes. So that's cool. So now we got some leverage, got somebody else paying for it. We've got, you know, capital gains that we don't have to pay until we sell it. We get to depreciate. We've got all these benefits of real estate. Now, what are some of the negatives? Well, the first thing is that you need to make sure that you put enough money down on that house to where your payment's low enough to where you can rent it below market. Now, I know that sounds crazy. Everybody wants to, I don't want to rent it below market. Well, let me give you the mindset of renting it below market. My father had these for years. I grew up understanding, he's like, you always rent below the market. Never try to get top dollar. I'm like, okay, this is coming from an old guy. He passed away when he was 89, and he bought his first property when he was 19, him and my mother. And my mother's 96, and they're still rental houses, paying rent, you know, that kind of thing. And it was funny, back in the days when they owned their house, he put a little mailbox drop in the front door, and some of the people that rented would just come by the house and drop the check or even cash through the front mailbox. I mean, wake up the next day, and guess what happens? There's money in the front, on the floor. And so you think about things like that. You say, well, why would you rent it below market? Because then you got lots of people to choose from. All right, that they're saying, man, this is a good deal. This is a good deal. So then you get to choose the best renters that don't tear your property up, all that kind of stuff. Takes away a lot of the headaches and things like that. So that's the thing. So you want to put enough down. I recommend about 50% down if you want to do something like that. Ultimately, you want to get to a point where you can have someone that actively manages it for you, because who wants to get up and get a call in the middle of the night, saying the plumbing's leaking or the roof, all that kind of stuff. So you hire a management company. But at the end of the day, rental real estate is an active investment, whereas if you put money in stocks or mutual funds, something like that, it's a passive investment. Now, if you can convert your rental property to being a passive investment by hiring maybe a really good management company, there you go, something like that. So real quick, if you want to get involved in real estate investing, I'm going to give you the person to call. And that's Angela Peach with Compass Real Estate. That's who I recommend. And I recommend her because I know what she does. She helps you do things that are pretty much different than the rest of them. She stages houses, and in addition to staging them, she has a thing called the Compass Concierge, which she can help you get your house ready to sell, and with all the repairs and things like that, they will loan you the money, no fees, no interest, and help you get better returns on it. So how do you find her? Just Google Angela Peach at Compass Real Estate, Angela Peach, Compass Real Estate. So that might be something if you're wanting to get involved in that. So with that being said, now what about stocks, bonds, and cash? Well, we got some other ways we can do that. We can do something called a mutual fund. We can do put it into index funds. There's all different types of mutual funds. So let's talk about what is a mutual fund to begin with. A simple way of understanding a mutual fund is this. Very few people have the time, the expertise, the desire to personally investigate individual companies in a manner in which they can get good enough information to be able to make good, wise decisions. So let me give you an example. I went to 25 years ago, went to a mutual fund company. First time I had a chance to really see the inner workings. Went out there, went to Los Angeles, one of the top mutual fund companies, and they had one of their fund analysts, one of their guys that go out and do the research, to talk. And they said, here's how we, before we put our money in anywhere, here's what we do. We, first off, I'm a doctor. And a medical doctor. And then I got my degree, like at a Harvard Business School kind of thing. And he said, I'm a pharmaceutical analyst. So what I do is I study drug companies. First thing we do is we go out on a regular basis. We meet with the C-level, the CEO and all that. And they welcome us in because we're big investors. And we get to talk to them and get their vision of the company and where it's going. And then from there, we go talk to the employees and then maybe talk with the research and development people. And we start doing that. We do that on every single drug company. Then I'll go to the doctor's conventions and see what they're prescribing. And then I'll go to the patients and see how they're responding. And then we'll send all that up to DC and they'll figure out what the political environment's like. We do that on every one of our companies, every drug company, and then we rank them A, B, C, D, and E, and we wait toward this and so on. And so when I have people tell me, I think I'm going to buy individual stocks, I'm like, nah, bad idea. But anyway, that's what a mutual fund does. And then what a mutual fund then, even after doing all their research, generally speaking, they might have 3% of their money in any one stock. And these are big companies, things like that. So if I were you, the first thing I would do is never buy individual stocks. I mean, it's just pure luck, I think. I mean, I have an opinion. I have a radio show. But I've yet to see people really, over a long period of time, outperform the professionals. But you may be. You may be one of the exceptions. So what they do then is they charge a management fee. And that management fee might be 1%, give or take, to put it into hundreds of companies. And then they invest that. You can also buy just an index. An index is just give me all 500 stocks. And as a result, you can get involved that way, get yourself diversified. So with that, we got one more segment. We're going to continue on Basics of Investing 101. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We will be right back. Right, last segment, and today is Basics of Investing 101. I had a question, and if you do have questions, just call in 866-651-4848, and that'll connect you up with a lot of things. I mean, all the way from our workshops that we have coming up, along with if you would like to meet with someone and do a consultation. What my company does is we provide education, just like you're hearing right now, but then we also can implement all of the financial products needed to get you on track. Had a question, so how much does it cost to get one of these mutual funds? And, that's the interesting thing about it is that it's less than the cost of a bank account usually. When I first got started, it was $50 a month to open an account, and it's still $50 a month. Back then, it was $25. Now, I think most of them are $50 a month. And that would allow you to open up your own mutual fund. You can put it into a Roth IRA if you're young, getting started. So there's no excuse to do that. And I know on my app, if I want to put $5 in at any given time, all I got to do is pull my phone out. It's tied to my bank account. I can put $5 in or whatever I want to do. So I always tell people you got choices. You can spend it or save it. And if you decide you want to save it, guess what you do? Just pull your phone out and go home and save that money and get it invested, that kind of thing. So mutual funds, there's all different types of funds. We talked about Stocks, bonds, and cash. Well, mutual funds are the same way. You've got stock funds, bond funds, and money market funds. And so the stock funds are made up of different types of stocks. You can go in and get a large company growth fund. You can get a small company fund. You can get a mid-sized company, small, medium, large stocks. You can invest outside the United States in international funds. You can invest in global funds. Global will invest in the U.S. and outside the U.S. You can buy the index funds. Those are like the S&P 500 or the Russell, whatever it may be. And what they do is they just buy a basket of all the stocks. And so when you do that, what that does is you say, you know what, I don't care. I don't care what the market does. All I know is over a long period of time, guess what? They're going to do fine. It's averaged 10% for 80 years. I'm just going to let it rip. And so that would be an index fund. And one of the benefits of an index fund is it's low cost. And one of the negatives is it's always invested. So you don't have the professional money manager, which is the other side, which is a managed mutual fund, where they go in, they say, well, we like the index, but there's 20% of the stocks we don't like. We like these others better, so we're going to put more money in that, or we're going to pull out and be cash, all these different things. But the long and short of it is that you have those kind of things in the stock funds. Then you can go buy bond funds. Bonds have corporate bonds. That would be big, you know, industrial strength companies, you know, what I consider AAA rated funds, that kind of deal. There's bond ratings. So they're pretty safe. They pay a lesser return. You got municipal bonds. That would be you borrow from a municipality. The benefit is tax-free income. Then you can go to junk bonds. That would be companies that are not as strong, say, as Exxon, but they're still strong, maybe an airline or something like that. They would be junk. Why do you buy junk bonds? Well, they research them, and they have junk bond funds that research, and they say, you know, this company's paying a higher interest rate, but they're still pretty strong, and so we think that's a good buy. We have ETFs. Those are exchange traded. A mutual fund is an open-ended fund, so there's unlimited number of shares. An ETF, it might buy an index, and you can sell that just like a stock throughout the day. And if you don't sell it, you can avoid some of the taxes that would occur. Mutual funds do pass through, so that's one of the negatives of a mutual fund. But at the same time, a mutual fund gets you diversified. So we do all these kind of things. That's what I do. I'll never forget one morning called into one of the radio hosts here in Nashville, and he said, we got Roy Matlock, the mutual fund guy. He sits in front of the fireplace reading those prospectuses. That's what he does every day. Very romantic kind of guy. So that's what I do. I do that kind of stuff, and I teach people about money and teach people how to make money and save money and get ahead. I educate. That's the goal. And then, of course, we do have the products to make that happen. You then can go into annuities. And what annuities are, they are the opposite of life insurance. They generally speaking, the goal of an annuity is to put you something in place that one day you can have a guaranteed income. Now, do I think that you should be so concerned about guarantees? No, but you can take a percentage of your money, throw it into different types of annuities. There's all kinds. You've got fixed annuities. You've got indexed annuities. You've got variable annuities. You've got annuities now that will guarantee you against some of the losses, called structured annuities. So we're in investing 101. So what is a fixed annuity? A fixed annuity is a guarantee by the insurance company that you can put your money in there and you have guaranteed principal. Now, why would you do it rather than just put it in the bank? Well, you put it there because it'll be a little bit higher interest rate because it's not as safe as the bank. It's only as good as the insurance company. Second thing is insurance products. Because they have that, they are tax-deferred. So you can put the money in. It's called a tax-deferred annuity. And then when you take it out, you have some lifetime income streams. I never recommend that you annuitize things, but the truth of the matter is that they're still out there, and you can buy what's called a life annuity. And here's what you're doing. You're saying, how much will you pay me for the rest of my life? And they give you a number, and you think, I'm going to outlive my money if I don't do this. So therefore what I'm going to do is I'm going to live forever, and the insurance company is going to pay me everything that I would have gotten, and they're going to have to keep paying me. So I'm betting I'm going to live a long time, and I'm going to buy one of these and outlive the insurance company. All right, you know, there you go, the amount of money there. So anyway, that's an annuity when you annuitize. Now, I would never annuitize because if you're trading your money in for an income stream, but if you die, if it's a life annuity and you die the first month, well, then you would be out of luck. And there's other things. So there's no inheritance once you start annuitizing. Now, there may be you buy in and you get some different things like a five-year certain. It says, well, we're going to pay for your life, but at least 5 years. All right, there's stuff like that. But that is a fixed annuity. Those are old, very few people. I never see them anymore, but that's it. So one of the things that's really becoming the big thing today is something called an indexed annuity. Indexed annuity has some guarantee of principal. So basically, if the stock market goes up, you get a percentage of the capture of the stock market. But if it goes down, you get zero. So if it makes money, you make money. If it loses money, you don't lose money. And then the idea behind it is that it only goes up and never comes down, and you can lock in a lifetime income guarantee on it. What's the positive with it? Well, you got some safety and some, you know, downside protection. What's the negative? Well, the annuity, you know, chances are your monthly income will never change. So therefore, as inflation kicks in, you have that to have to worry about. So, you know, some people do that. You know, compared to a bank, it's better. You know, I think it's better in a bank, but is it something that I think is a great place to be with all your money? Absolutely not. If you want to do a percentage of it because you're really wanting to cut back on some risk, then you can go into what's called a variable annuity. A variable annuity has the same tax-deferred status, same lifetime income, and they put it in mutual funds. And then when they put it in there, that index, those funds inside of there have the ability to go up and go down. All right, they can make money, lose money. It's just like they're in the market. You can go stocks, bonds, cash, however you want to do it. And when you do that, what's going to end up happening is you will have the ability to have tax deferral. You can make money. You can start doing a lifetime income on it. And the chances are you'll have a better chance of keeping up with inflation when you go on that. The last annuity, a structured annuity, says, look, leave it here for 6 years. Here's what we're going to do. It'll be in the market. We're going to limit some of the upside. Okay, if it's in the S&P, we're going to limit some of the upside, but you get most of it. But we'll give you, if it loses money over that six-year period, five-year period, whatever that number is, if it's down 20%, we'll replace your losses. So there's all these different things that go into retirement planning, saving money, that kind of thing. And so what I would encourage you to do is to, you know, do your research. We help people with their money. That's what I do. The research starts... if you want to go to maybe one of the best research places you can ever go, just go to my website, roymatlackjr.com, because we have, I guess, about 30 educational shows on there. And download How Money Works, download the budget forms, download all the downloads. We've got every kind of download there is. And with that being said, my name is Roy Matlack Jr. Keep listening. We will be back next week.